Welcome to a brand new edition of the UIW Athletics Podcast. This is your host, Shane Milling, and we have a good show in store for you with interviews with tennis player Brandon Davis, as well as head baseball coach Danny Heap and head football coach Larry Cannon. This week in UIW action, the annual UIW Invitational Track and Field Meet is going on over the weekend at Benson Stadium. Softball team is at home on Saturday and Sunday against McNeese State. And the baseball team is on the road this weekend at Southeastern Louisiana. Baseball has won three of their last four games and will hope to continue that string. Softball will be hoping to get back on the winning road after losing three games last weekend. And track and field is getting closer and closer to the Southland Conference meet that'll be coming up in just about a month. That will take place at Central Arkansas in mid-May. Tennis is closing on their season. Only a couple more matches left for both men and the women. So the spring is rapidly coming to a close, and so is the whole year. It's been a great year at UIW in our first year as a member of NCAA Division I and the Southland Conference. Thank you for listening in. Hopefully you will enjoy today's show. All right, joining us now on the UIW Athletics Podcast is head baseball coach Danny Heap. Coach, thanks for coming on with us.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, we're about 60% of the way through the season. You know, looking, I've talked about this other times, but I thought the baseball schedule was probably the most difficult of any of our teams this year. And you guys have gone through some growing pains, but right now you're starting to play a little bit better, won three of your last four. I guess, what are some of the things you've been encouraged about this year with your team?
Well, we've been able to compete. I mean, we've only been, you know, kind of what we'd call blown out, you know, six, seven runs, I would say, just a handful of times.
Yeah.
We've lost a lot of games, some one-run games. We've lost some, you know, 4-2 games. We've lost, you know, a 4-3 game to Baylor. We're competing. Now, we also understand that we're a little shorthanded. We've got some injuries right now, especially to our pitching staff. We've lost, you know, two infielders. So we understand that part. But, yeah, I mean, it's nothing I didn't expect. I mean, I knew we were going to struggle. I knew offense was going to be our Achilles heel on this thing. You know, if most of our recruits, you know, we had some junior college guys coming in, but we had some freshmen in some key positions. You know, we knew this was going to happen, but that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to make a schedule that would show us where we need to go, show us what we need to recruit against, and show us what we need to make adjustments for in the future. So, yeah, is our schedule probably way too tough for us? No, I wouldn't say way too tough, but I mean, I knew that we weren't going to come out and win 30 games.
Right.
I knew that it was going to be, we were going to have to play good, solid defense. I knew that our pitchers were going to have to probably do a better job than I expected, but that's part of it. I knew it, you know, and we're learning and we're moving forward with it with recruiting.
How important was it for you guys, you know, to get a series win over New Orleans? Kind of that we've had where we've won the first game of the series and then dropped the next two, but this was kind of that first time where we were at least able to win a series, and then you took that momentum and you guys really beat UT Pan Am pretty easily.
Well, New Orleans is kind of in the boat we are, you know, and that's what I told our guys. I said, you know, we're going to be competing against Abilene the next week and the week, and then we have New Orleans after. I said, they're kind of in our boat, you know. They've gone having to go through the transition. So, I mean, that we should be able to compete against teams like that. Now, we understood when we played the Notre Dames and the Baylors and the Santa Claras and the, you know, everybody else, Oklahoma State, we understood those are established programs. I mean, we're behind that, but we did compete with those teams. I mean, you know, we didn't get blown out by anybody. It just tells you that in baseball, other than football. You know, I'd hate to see what our football team would do against Oklahoma State or Notre Dame or somebody like that. But in baseball, it doesn't take, you know, it doesn't take the 300-pound guy that can run a 4-5. Right? That isn't. I mean, if you can get yourself 5 or 6 quality pitching staff, if you can get yourself 3 or 4 or 5 hitters, then you can compete with anybody if you stay healthy. But what you have to understand is we are a private school, which is sometimes hard for people to understand. We are not a state school where the cost is $6,000 of tuition to go here. Our walk-on isn't going to be the quality as at a state school. Our scholarships are not going to go as far as it will on a state school. And it's even at Notre Dame, and I've talked to Mick Aoki over at Notre Dame, he has the same issues that we have. He's got to deal with state schools, and he understands that he technically is not going to, you know, when it's $50,000+ to go to Notre Dame, he is not going to be able to out-recruit somebody where it's cost $12,000 or $14,000. But sometimes it's hard for even administrative-wise or even faculty-wise or student population-wise to understand that part. Mm-hmm. We're going to compete. We're going to have years. We're going to be able to possibly have really good years and compete in conference. But on a day-to-day basis, you know, we've got to do our homework, and we've got to take more chances than state schools. And if our recruiting class doesn't follow through like we think, then we're going to have a problem because of our depth.
You know, the pitching seemed like has done much better probably over about the last month. Gino Encina's really pitched well, tossed his first career shutout over the weekend. What has it been about him? You know, I think his last 4 or 5 starts have all been, you know, what you'd call good starts.
I think playing good teams. I think he understands that he can't just throw the ball somewhere around the plate and get people out anymore.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't Division II where you can just, you know, okay, I'll just walk a couple more guys and get into their 7, 8, 9 and those guys can't hit. What he has found out that you make a mistake, you pay for it. So it's elevated the way he works out, the way he does bullpens, and the way he approaches the game. We've talked about micromanaging the strike zone, hitting your spots, being able to throw non-fastballs in the strike zone. You know, those days of just making mistakes and having these guys swinging a ball 4 feet in front of the home plate are over. They're going to sit there and look at it, and then all of a sudden, you know, okay, oh, my God. But this is what I think he's learned. He's learned that he's got to be better if he's going to be successful. And playing those good teams early, he found himself making good pitches, and they were hitting them. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I said, that's it. I mean, that's the way it is. You have to, you know, you have to make quality pitches to get people out at this level.
Does that help by him pitching well? Does that raise the other guys, you know, their level of pitching too?
Well, it helps. It helps keeping some, you know, not having to use everybody in the first game.
Yeah.
Which then all of a sudden you find yourself, I mean, you got to have, everybody's got what the quote they call a Friday starter.
Yeah.
And your Friday starter's got to give you innings. Because if you're out there burning your middle relief and your closer the first game of a 3-game set, and you've got another, you know, 18 innings to go, and you're going to run out of pitching. You know, there are clubs that we faced had 9 or 10 really good pitchers. You know, UT's got really good pitching up and down their staff. You know, a lot of the Big 12 teams have pitching up and down their staff. But we're not going to, because we're a small private school, we're going to have our six, you know, 6 or 7 guys are going to do most of our pitching for us. Those other guys are going to be throwing in games where we're up a lot or we're down a lot, or Tuesday games to try to get them innings to see where how they're going to fit in the future. But, you know, once you get down to conference play, and I understand that we're not going to be able to compete for conference for a few years here, but once we get down to conference play, we have to have, you know, we've got our rotation pretty set. And those other guys are going to have to pitch games that are going to be Tuesdays or possibly some of those blowout games that we're having to use a lot of arms and get themselves back into a week, you know, a rotation that they can throw for us.
Alex Schaefer has really kind of stepped up this year, and he's kind of the guy it seems like you've kind of been relying on him quite a bit lately in relief. He had a 3-inning save the other day, and what is it about him? Last year, you kind of used him as a starter and a reliever. This year,
just all out of the bullpen, but he's getting a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, the Schaefer's got probably their best arm on the team. I mean, he's our hardest throwing. Last year, our time throwing strikes. The deal with Schaefer is to, you know, throw his non-fastball somewhere around. We've kind of getting away from the changeup, which he struggled with, and now trying to throw a hard curveball, hard slider, which he seems to be a lot more comfortable with. Now, being a guy out of the bullpen, he doesn't have to be a three-pitch guy. He can go out and he can get away with that once or twice, you know, once through the lineup, if he does it right. But the deal with him is he's everything he was missing up a lot last year and had a hard time. Now he has learned through just working about getting over his knee, getting over his front foot, following through, and he's finding, you know, making those knee-high 91, 92, 93 mile an hour. I mean, he was throwing 91, 92 against Baylor. And if you do that, you know, that for two or three innings, then you're going to be successful. I mean, he's going to be able to. He got Baylor out. You know, he's been getting good people out if he's in the strike zone. He struggles when he gets behind an account, even at
most
this level.
Struggle
well, even at this
account.
Level, everybody can hit a 91, 92 mile an hour fastball. But you know, he's like I said, he's kind of gotten away from the changeup a little bit. We're using that as a third pitch, not necessarily as a second primary off speed. And he's doing a lot better with a harder curveball or a slider that he feels more comfortable with.
Well, last thing, we're looking forward to this weekend. You guys have Southeastern Louisiana. I just briefly looked at them. They have a pretty good pitching staff. I think they have something like a 2.75 team ERA.
Yeah.
You know, what's kind of what can we look forward to this weekend?
Well, yeah, this weekend it's when you get down to this point, you know, it's who does the fundamental stuff, who can make the plays, who can do the small ball, who can move runners, score runners from third base. You know, these games like this, we understand that if they go out and they score four or five, we're going to have a tough time. So we have to keep these games under four. And now the other question is, how do we score four? You know, we've got to do little stuff right. We've got to work the count. We got to get walks. We got to get base runners. We've got to move people with bunts, hit and runs. Even the good schools, even the big schools that we play. My God, Baylor was bunting in the fifth inning. You know, so I mean, they all understand that they build their teams around pitching and defense at this level, and we're not seeing any bad pitchers.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen a few on the Tuesday games and you know, Baylor brought in a guy that was probably, you know, one of their, you know, 12 or 13 on their depth chart, and he struggled, you know, because he's only throwing 87, 86, and everybody can hit that at this point. And then all of a sudden, you know, they got to put their closer in who hadn't thrown it, you know, hadn't given up an inning.
Well,
well, the one lefty hadn't given up a run all year. So, but, you know, and then they lose, you know, then they go out and they play raw close games against Texas. So it's that's what it is. I mean, they build their teams around pitching and defense, and none of these, the blowout games seem to be, you know, the ones on the Sunday night games where, you know, everybody's depth and their pitching is a little different. So,
well, Coach, good luck this weekend. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you later.
All right, thanks.
All right, joining us now is head football coach Larry Kennan. Coach, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And we're wrapping up the spring season. You guys just had your spring game on Saturday. Have a few more practices this week. I guess, what's the feeling around the program, and how do you think this spring has gone for you guys?
You know, I think it's gone extremely well. I think the feeling amongst all of our players and coaches and fans is that we're a much better team than we were at the end of the season last year, just because we've matured. You know, you mature through osmosis after a bunch of freshmen. We had a whole bunch of freshmen play last year, and they're a lot more mature, a lot older, and we're a very talented young football team.
Does it make running practice easier now that these guys have kind of been through the system for a whole year?
Yeah, and it does. We've all been through it. As coaches, we've been through it for 3 years too, and so it's a lot easier. We all know what to expect. It's easier. The players are understanding it. It takes a long time to put an offensive or defensive system in, and you know, we're at that 3 year mark, and that's about when you start really seeing the results.
Now, you know, Trent Britton started quarterback this past year as a redshirt freshman. He looked good in the spring game. You know, what are your expectations for him? What do you tell him you want him to be doing?
Well, I've told him I'm very pleased with him. You know, he's, and I said it the other day, he's he's a real asset with his feet. He's a real asset because he can throw the ball well, and he's becoming more of an asset with his mind because he's learning the game a lot better. He understands the offense a lot better, and when you do that, you tend to perform better. Plus, he's got better receivers to throw to, and that helps any quarterback.
Yeah. How much does, you know, last year you guys had the winning season, and you won a couple of games late in the season, basically on last-minute drives. What kind of confidence does that give your offense and your defense, knowing that you guys can win those type of close games, which we hadn't done in the past?
I think there's no question it helps us a great deal. It helps our attitude. You know we can compete. You know, beating McMurray out there, and they were a good team, and we were really beat up, and that helped immensely, and probably allowed us to beat Abilene Christian the next week, and they were a very good football team. So we feel very confident about that. You know, our schedule's harder, particularly early. It's brutal early season schedule. But I think as long as we manage our expectations and just play to the best of our ability and don't worry too much about what the score of the game is till the fourth quarter, and then we try to win it.
Is there some excitement since this year we get to play that full Southland Conference schedule, whereas last year you played a couple of the schools, but you didn't get to see, you know, most of the schools?
Yeah, I think we're all excited about that. You know, we open with Sacramento State and then play Stephen F. Austin, which is a non-conference game,
right?
They're in the conference, and then get North Dakota State, and then we're into the Southland Conference schedule. So we're excited about that. It'll be a lot of fun to see how we match up. You know, you can't know how good you are until you play the best.
Well, just looking ahead at the schedule in terms of who we play at home, I guess you couldn't ask for much better. You have what you would call probably the three toughest opponents in the Southland all come here this year, Southeastern, Louisiana, McNeese, and Sam Houston. Obviously, those are tough games, but for the first time, you get to play those type of teams at home.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we were 5-1 at home last year, and we like playing at home. Everybody does. And we'll have some big crowds, and those people will bring people with them, and so it'll be really fun games. And again, you know, if you get to play real good teams at home, you got a better chance to beat them at home than you do on the road.
Yeah. You know, who are some of those guys this spring that maybe moved up the depth charts just from how well they played through the practices and in the game?
You know, a couple things, you know, again, we're really, really young. You know, Devin Jensen's a midterm freshman, and he's performed very well. I'm not sure he won't play a considerable amount for us. Jordan Hicks played some as a freshman, and he's had a phenomenal spring.
You know, it was nice to see him get that long catch in the game.
Yeah, and he can run, and he's exciting, and he competes very well. And of course, Casey Jennings is back, our leading receiver, and Trent, and the stable of running backs that all return, and plus Joe Sadler's back, and he's had a good spring, and you know, Cole Wick's better as a tight end. We just feel, you know, we lost one guy who played it all for us, Matt Bass, and he was a good player, but he's easily replaceable for what he did, so that's a good thing for us.
What about on the defensive side of the ball? I know you're more of an offensive coach, but have some guys kind of shown some stuff to you that have you excited?
Yeah, you know, the young guys who played, Irby and Kobe Douglas at corner, they're quite a bit better because they played last year, and you know, they'll be a sophomore and junior. Brandon Tagsley will be a junior, and he's had a very good spring. the young linebackers can all run, and they're fun to watch because they can really run, and they can, you know, even make mistakes and go run the ball down. So we're excited about that. We have a little more experience than we've had. Plus, we've got a lot of young guys who can run. And you know, as I've said since I got here, the number one thing we need are more people who can run and make plays. And we've got a lot more of those guys.
I thought with Kobe last year, you saw early in the season he would get beat on some deep plays. And by the end of the season, he kind of figured it out a little bit, had a couple of big interceptions for us the last few games of the year.
Yeah, that's a tough position to play as corner, particularly when you're playing man like we do, and mm-hmm. some, and you get beat, you just have to have no conscience. You got to come back, because everybody who plays corner gets beat on some big plays, and you just got to come back. And you know, he's a lot better, and as I said, Irby's a lot better. You know, we feel good with the defensive bunch.
Now, the defense had 9 sacks in the game. Now, obviously, it's basically two-hand touch on the quarterback, so maybe some of those the quarterback gets away from, but it had to be encouraging for you to see that the front seven was able to get that kind of pressure.
Yeah, we have some good outside pass rushers, and that's a big key. And we've got a couple defensive linemen who have been banged up, haven't played much. You know, Jenkins will add to that when he can mm-hmm. rush from inside. But Alan Smith and Greg Lemon and Joel Higgins, those guys can rush the outside, and they're good players, and they'll add a lot to us.
How much do you guys call, like, blitzes, and how much do you just kind of it's in the scheme that those guys are able to get to the quarterback?
Some of it the other day was blitzes, but some of it was just, fast guys coming mm-hmm. from the outside. And protection, pass protection, is the hardest part of football.
Right.
And we're playing a different bunch of guys in the offensive mm-hmm. line, so they mess it up a little bit because it's hard to get that figured out early on. But we're going to have a lot better pass rush than we've had.
Well, Coach, anything else you want to add? I mean, what's kind of the summer schedule for the football program?
We start lifting on June 2nd as a team, and most of our guys will be here. You know, 2 years ago in the summer, we had about 15 to 18 guys here.
Yeah.
Last summer, we had anywhere from 50 to 70 guys here. And this year, we expect to have at least 50, 60, 70
right.
guys here most of the summer. And that's really an important part, because that's when you bond as a team. And our freshmen will come in and have about a month before fall camp starts. So it'll be a fun summer. They can lift. We can meet with them a little bit. And we'll watch them throw 7-on-7 and all that stuff against UTSA and Texas Lutheran. So we're looking forward to it.
Any predictions that we're going to shock the world when we go up to North Dakota State, 3-time defending champs?
No, you know I'm better than that. I don't make predictions about anything, except that what I'm real sure of is we're going to do the best we can do and play as hard as we can play. And we're going to do the best job we can of playing in maybe the toughest place to play in the whole country. I mean, that counts everybody.
It's loud there. It's loud.
Loud, and it's a really hostile environment. They're right up on you. And so it'll be a great trip for us. We'll have a couple games under our belt.
Yeah.
And it'll be a great trip because we get on a charter flight and fly up there. It'll be the first time that's happened for us. So.
Yeah. Well, Coach, thanks for joining us, and we'll check back with you again before the season starts.
My pleasure.
All right, joining us now is senior men's tennis player Brandon Davis. Brandon, thanks for coming on today.
Not a problem. Good to be here.
And you guys are having a good season. First year in Division I. And this past week, you had a couple of nice wins. Beat Trinity at their place, and then here we beat Laredo. And they both kind of came down to those final matches.
Mm-hmm.
You had the key win in one of them. I guess just for those of us that aren't tennis players, take us through, what's it like, those tough matches? It seems like we've played a lot where we've won 4-3, mm-hmm. or, we seem to win by 1 point every time.
Right. Yeah, so those matches are, going into them, we know the matches are going to be pretty tough, and most of the time we still haven't seen, our opponents play. So all we can do is try our best to start off with doubles, because, we start off with doubles every time, and against other D1 schools, it's basically whoever wins those 2 out of 3 doubles, they get the first point, and that can be a real crucial point. Now, most of the time, we don't, the UIW men's tennis, we don't usually win our doubles.
We've struggled in doubles this year.
Yeah, we have, but, every once in a while, we'll get two of the victories, but usually what our thing is we sweep the singles, so we lose that first point of doubles, which can be crucial, but we have a very strong top six players. So most of the time we win. If we can win the first four, mm-hmm. that's it for us. But Matches don't always finish at the same time, so we'll win a match, we'll lose a match, win another match, and then before you know it, it's down to one person with the score tied up. You just need 4 points, so often it's 3-3, and you know whoever's sent on the court last, usually myself or Brody Rodriguez, because he's number six, and it's just that's just the way it goes. And whenever it's down to the last person, you know, all you can do is hope that they pull it out. Nerves are a huge factor, though, at that point.
You know, how's when you're playing in singles, do you know what's going on with the other matches very well?
No, not very well. It's kind of funny. They're Croatians. They don't tend to change the score. So
yeah,
usually,
I've noticed that.
Yeah, usually I'm just left completely in the dark. I have no idea what's going on over there. And I don't dare ask the coach how they're doing because he'll just say, it doesn't matter. Just keep playing yourself. So, but when you're really, really in the zone, it doesn't even matter. You don't even know there's people around you. You just, maybe you can hear your teammates cheering you on, but you're so into it, you're just ready for the next point, and you don't really care what's going on around you. You just, you know, try and play your best.
What do you think it's been that has allowed you guys to do so well in singles and then struggle a little bit in doubles this year?
I think it's just, you know, we're singles specialists. There's some players that come out. Growing up in juniors, they just play doubles better, not as strong in singles. But all of us, I'd say all of us are singles specialists. That's just where we have spent most of our time training. And we've practiced doubles quite a bit. We play them every day before a match. We'll spend that day, like today, we'll be practicing just doubles. But it's just our strong suit. And, you know, we're really confident that. So even when we're down after doubles, we kind of, I just tell the team, you know, this is our thing. We always give ourselves a little hole. We dig ourselves out, sweep the singles most of the time, and just hopefully we can get lucky every once in a while with some
doubles. Now, in a match, how many different players can actually play? Obviously, only six guys can play singles, but could you hypothetically play six different people in your doubles?
Oh, absolutely. You could, if we had every single, if we had 12 players, what we could do is we could play two foreign, number one doubles, two players, number two doubles with two players, same thing with three, and you could have a totally new lineup for singles. Maybe if, you know, the school had a ton of money, for example, we could have double specialists for doubles, and then if we had enough money for, you know, more single specialists, just throw the singles players out there. But
now, a lot of times your top couple singles players are usually pretty good at doubles just because...
Yeah.
They're a really good player anyways.
Exactly.
Okay, thank
yeah.
you.
So. Also, they're pretty darn tall. Those Croatians on our team, and they have the height. I don't know what they feed them over there.
Joseph's like 6'6", I think.
Yeah, 6'6", or 6'7". That's funny. He says he wakes up in the morning taller than he does in the afternoon. So maybe we should play him and play earlier matches. but yeah, his height definitely helps for doubles. Long arm, long wingspan. Mm-hmm. So you can't get around him very well. And he has good hands, too, good reflexes. So he's a very, very strong doubles player.
Now, you're kind of the most tenured person on the team this year.
Yeah.
You know, what's it been like, you know, making this move from Division II to Division I? What have you noticed as the biggest change or adjustment?
I've noticed, on our part, I've noticed a little more dedication just in practice, not doing, you know, stupid as much at night. We had some, our coaches, I'd say, was running us a little harder at the beginning of the season. And just more, it's more motivation because we're playing teams that we know are even better. Because we were good in Division II, but we feel like we could have been better, could have even been playing better teams. So getting to play the teams that we know are top, like Baylor, we played Nicholls State and we lost to them. We know they're good, so it motivates us even more, even in the middle of the week, even when we don't want to practice. But apart from that, I'd say just the team bond. The team just keeps getting better after every practice. Just keep hitting, and that D2 to D1 kind of is giving us a boost in confidence as well, playing other D2 teams.
Right. How difficult is it to mesh, you know, the different cultures that you have on your team with players from different countries? How, you know, because I think you guys have, you know, Croatians,
some Brazilians,
Americans. A couple of Americans, some Mexico.
How difficult is that to get you guys kind of, I guess, all on the same page?
It's really not that hard. It might seem like it is, but the team's not too big. So, you know, we have the two Croatians, but their English is really, really good. You know, for especially Josip, who's very strong at learning different languages. I think he knows like four languages. And then from Brazil, Jair, he's, you know, we just feel like he's already part of the team. We all hang out all the time. You know, those long trips, it's team bonding. So it's really not a struggle with all those international players. We all, and some of the brothers from New Braunfels, like, I'm from New Braunfels, Tasha's from New Braunfels.
There's a bunch of New Braunfels players.
Johan and Chris are from New Braunfels. So we're all, we've known each other for a long time already. And so that probably helps, hopefully, the internationals to want to hang out with us as much as possible. We listen to their music, too, and everything. So
that'd be interesting.
Yeah, Leo listens to that Croatian and Spanish music. Some of us are fans, some are not, but, you know, we listen to each other's music. It's fun. It's a fun experience.
Now, you guys are coming up. Season's almost over. A few more matches left. What's kind of the goals for the last few matches of the year?
We don't know our goals exactly. We know that we're playing Corpus this weekend. We're going to travel to Oklahoma. We know Corpus just put on some really, really strong results. They're going to be really good. So we're going to do the best we can against them. Maybe, I guess you could say one of our goals is to get our national ranking back.
We were briefly ranked for, I think, 1 week.
We were, yeah. The ranking is a weird concept, the way they do
it.
It's sort of, they take the best maybe six matches, maybe, and so they play take the top ranked teams you play. So at the beginning, we were beating these D1 teams that didn't, you know, but have a huge ranking, but a lot of the other teams in the nation hadn't quite played.
One also helped, I think, because we played Baylor, who was ranked very high, and we won a couple matches against them, got a couple points. So I always wonder if it helps, like, instead of getting swept 7-0, if you lose a close match against a good team, if that counts, too.
That can help for your individual ranking, not so much for the team.
Gotcha.
Actually, Baylor, I don't think we won any matches, although Jair and Tucker had match point. They could have taken down one of the Baylor doubles teams, which would have been insane.
That would have been
huge. Because they're number, you know, 5 or 7 in the whole country, so it's really impressive. But, you know, you could look at another team's ranking or how they did individually against their top team, and if they're really close matches, then you know they were really good. So that can put a little pressure on you, too. Mm.
Well, Brian, I think we've run out of time, but we thank you for coming on and explaining to us about the world of college tennis.
Yeah, not a problem. Thank you for having me.